Timberland Torella, hello and welcome to this week's news wrap-up brought to you by the ESOL Cabinet. I am your host today, Gwena Mashale, joined by my colleagues Herman Malloy and Nandine Tini. Guys, say hello to the listeners out there.
Hello again.
So, guys, we are the youth of today, bringing you all things new and current affairs through our eyes. I hope you guys help you stick with us as we look at the week's biggest stories, talk about the controversies, and laugh about the weird ones. Let's get comfortable and dive right in. So, yesterday, I went to the old, I'm going to call it an old Air Force base, because it's actually an old one, at Swartkop in Centurion. And after many days of delays, the remains of the 14 soldiers finally arrived at the base. So the bereaved families were also there, and they had a whole convoy for the bodies, as well as the families. We spoke to one Chaplain General Ernest Maseru on the grieving families and the SNDA family in total, because he said that at the same time, it seems as if the world is forgetting that the SNDF is also grieving. Let's take a listen to that.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. As we're standing and behind us here, AFGOP is delivering the 14 bodies of our fallen soldiers. And all I see is the giants, courageous men who went out there to DRC to say, we will even die for our own brothers and sisters across. It doesn't matter. And for us as a defense force, our pain is so deep. And because we are the ones who have sent the soldiers, people think we are not in pain. Our pain is just looked down and because people want to just criticize why we are there and so on. And I think to make it clear for the people, members of the Defense Force work on command. You know, if the Commander-in-Chief, having decided, based on facts, you know, the President would not just wake up and send the soldiers for fun, as people assume. The President won't just wake up and say, no, I think I like how they look. They have good guns and so on. You know, it is about the need for silencing the gun in Africa. It is about the need for peace.
So, guys, just on your thoughts, guys, like, after a whole long, like, after 2 weeks, guys, of waiting for these bodies, they finally have arrived. How are you guys feeling?
You know, Gwena, when I saw those coffins covered in South African flags and those soldiers carrying the coffins, it felt so real. Finally, they were still in DRC and, but yesterday it felt so close, like it was a sad moment. And I also saw that the soldiers that were carrying those coffins looked very young. And you could see that, oh my God, I wonder what was going on in their heads as they are bringing back and also carrying their fallen brothers. But also just yesterday, I think it was a very sad moment, and it became a reality that, yeah, these 14 soldiers have really fallen and we are finally laying them to rest.
I understand that. Herman, your thoughts?
So for me, it's two things, right? Yes, we are happy that our soldiers have been returned. Families can start preparing for burials, I mean to say. And yeah, I mean, now it's opening a new chapter, as Nandi says, so it felt real. So I'm guessing that's what's going through everyone, every affected family at this point, to say, ish. Yeah, because some might be hoping, might have the hopes to say, you know what, we'll get a call to say, no, actually, media got the things wrong. Our son or my husband is still alive somewhere, wabo. So now it's a real thing. And talking about climate, you know, it's funny how weather and everything communicates with Earth. I mean, when they arrived, when they landed in South Africa, it started to pour over, which shows that there was something that was happening in the county. Although it didn't rain the whole South Africa, but yeah, you saw at the base, in Pretoria, it started to rain when like they arrived, and minutes later it started to be more calm with this a moon shining bright. So I mean, it was, I feel like it was the way of the earth communicating with us to say, yes, we have returned your soldiers, you know. That's all for me. Like, those two things, I found them very interesting.
Honestly, I think I might agree with you on the last point you mentioned, Herman. Well, guys, when I tell you guys, it was pouring when they were doing the marches and they were like basically transporting the bodies of the coffins into the hearse. The hearse. And it was just so like, you know, like you watch that type of scene in the movies, ne? Where it's raining and they're transporting the bodies, you know. You watch that on the movies. You never really think that you're gonna see that in real life. And when I tell you guys that moment itself was chilling, not in a sense, not only was I being cold because I was literally getting rained on, but it was a chilling experience because it's like, wow, I'm actually watching a tremendous and saddening event, because it is really sad. Because one of the things the chaplain even said was that the bodies of the soldiers, you can imagine they traveled through how many countries. You can imagine their physique, not even physique, how would you call it? He basically said that most of the bodies were not in a proper state, though not in good condition when they arrived finally in South Africa. And that's due to extensive travel, extensive weather. So, but they were still recognizable to the families. But still, you imagine like what they went through the heat here, Uganda, through the turbulence of the airplanes, like, yo, guys, it was very sad. Nandi, do you want to add in?
No, I'm also thinking of the part. Okay, so these people traveled so many countries. And I just wonder if the families will be content in seeing them in that way. Because we know, man, most families have our own beliefs. And so, you know.
I think everybody should experience that type of, I must say, kind of event or hand over ceremony just to watch what these officials do, because you know half the time you just watch you go to the normal funerals of you know the child dying in the community. You go to that one where all the community members are there, but you never go to the one where it's a full, you know, defense force, you know, it's a full police force. It's like you don't go to the one where they are cladded in armor, everyone is saluting, and they're all, and there's this one man who's screaming at the top of his lungs, chanting like directions, and it's thrilling, I guess. For me, for my side, it was thrilling because I got to experience all of that, and I was asking stupid questions on some, what are they doing? What is that? And sometimes the guy will just go, that's just a normal drill. But yeah, guys, I think I'm happy that they finally returned. I was live streaming through the memorial service, and one of the guys was like, because when Angie was coming in, I saw a comment on, guys, Angie must just leave the defense force. Look at our soldiers are dying. Guys, I feel
people should leave Angie alone, guys. Guys, it's not about Angie at this point. Yo.
It really is not, hey? It really is not. Because I think I do know how many times I had to explain to people, because even on WhatsApp and on Instagram, people kept saying the same thing. And I'm like, guys, the soldiers have been there way before Angie was appointed the Minister of Defense. So just because now Angie's there and we are seeing, not even, and the thing is that they've been dying before. Obviously, we're not saying that it should be a normal thing, but they've been dying. And now it's just that I think the Defense Force is just more vocal about the fact that they've been dying. And they just so happen to be vocal at the point where Angie is now the minister. And so now everybody's like, Angie's doing everything wrong. Angie's doing everything wrong. When it's supposed to be, guys, it's the budget. It's the budget. Don't blame poor Angie. I mean, do you have thoughts?
No, I think you've touched on a lot of things that I was thinking about. The budget constraints. I mean, you can't have equipment because of the budget constraints. And the fact that soldiers have been in DRC for over a decade now.
No, I get you. But yeah, Nandi, do you want to add one final point on this discussion, man?
No, I think let's get moving, please.
Okay. So, but on top of that, the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, also did address the families and the SNDF during the memorial service. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
Se buima So allow me then to thank those various people in those countries who have really assisted us to bring back our fallen soldiers. Our nation is in mourning for these brave souls who lost their lives in defense of our brothers and sisters in the Eastern DRC. On behalf of the people of the Republic of South Africa, I offer my profound and deepest sympathies to the fellows, to families of our fallen soldiers. Lava ibabek iba ime ibona nyamutela. Bala sekiriwe ibutomi biabona. Ikuri abalwela kurula na kwenza kuri shibam. Les sifano kuri simiela kwenzela kuri Afrika Dzonga na Afrika le hinkwayo iba na kurula. They lost their lives in defense of the defenseless. Yes, our fellow Africans, even if they may sound like they are in faraway countries, they are still Africans.
So I think the usual routine, you know, Ramaphosa, condolences to everyone. You know, we've also bereaved as a country. We've lost fathers, families, you know, the breadwinners, you know. So I think it's, for me, it was the usual speech. Not to say anything bad on him, man. It was the usual speech.
Yeah, I get you.
So, guys, so moving on. The Pretoria High Court, guys, was dealing with yet another disturbing case of murder for money. And it's becoming a senile trend now where everything is about money in this country. Oh, Herman was covering this whole story. Apparently, a woman in Brits allegedly lured her relative to South Africa only to poison him twice in an attempt to cash in on a life insurance policy. Herman, tell us more, please.
So, firstly, are you guys aware that Eastern Cape only is investigating about 67 cases of related insurance-related murders?
What do you mean Eastern Cape is investigating 67?
It's investigating 67 cases of this nature. So it shows how big or how prevalent this thing is. So I know. With this one that we are dealing with at the Pretoria High Court, so this woman is something like a supervisor in the mine in Rustenburg. So she called her relative from Lesotho, a 20-year-old gentleman, to say, "Hey Joe, can you please come? I'll help you find a job, Bobo. I'll be there." So because she's a rich aunt, and then she organized the document, because this guy came illegally into the country. After this guy came into South Africa illegally, the lady organized documents and then she registered her under a life policy. And then in 2021, March, she poisoned him twice but failed. That's when she hired a hitman to come and finish the job that she couldn't. And then she did that, and then a police officer who was investigating the matter, the lady approached her to say, "Hey Joe, I like you, you know, I think we can be a thing, a solid thing, or a Bonang and AKA type of vibe." And then she then gave him 30,000, and say, "My guy, can you please shut up? Here's something for you, Obo." So this guy, a police officer, went to his senior and said, "My guy, can you please close this case because there's no suspect?" And then the senior officer was like, "No, I'm not doing that." So allegedly, this woman, the rich aunt, and the police officer orchestrated the murder of the police officer, the senior police officer. And then it does not end there. After, when they thought that they have covered everything, the person that they conspired with, which is a relative to the rich aunt, called a radio station one day to say, guys, I have something which is heavy on my heart. I feel like I need to speak out. And yeah, I mean, she was arrested, and then they started investigating this one. They got the hitman, they got the rich aunt, and then they got the police officer. So this lady, Naye, she pleaded guilty on the murder charges and everything. So she's currently serving 10 years in Sun City. And these ones are on trial because they're saying, I mean, angazi lokhulumanani yabo. So yeah, that's generally the case at the Pretoria High Court.
Sure. Okay, so so for 30,000, you go and kill your superior because.
And then he was in love. It's Valentine's Day after all.
Hey, Herman, you see what confuses me? How can you fall in love with a suspect? I mean. Did the investigation officer know with this woman? We are currently investigating this woman. Was he aware of that? Or he just
to answer you, Nandi, I think she knew the guy knew, because apparently yesterday when she was busy testifying, the one who confessed, she's saying on the day of the scene, I saw this police officer going out with Rich Aunt, and Rich Aunt was like, okay, the rest of us, they will take our statement tomorrow, but mine, they took it today. Mm. So, you see.
Bye. Ulayagile, as you see, the things you do for life.
I'm Zalomnandi.
Yeah. But this rich aunt, why would she just take Umdanabantu from, it's very sad.
No, my thing is that it's like a Tinder scam, which is not without Tinder.
This time, Baske Mumjit.
Like, what is going on, guys? Shame. And imagine you're doing all of this. And shame, when I am in shame, I must feel for you, hey? You're covering a court case on Valentine's. Well, not even on Valentine's, but during Valentine's week.
Hey, true.
See what love does to people.
Yeah, you realize good. They are not forthcoming. Amantombazana are not forthcoming. They lie.
When
people.
I said only Amantombazana.
It's Amantombazana. Amantombazana. Women are not good people, hey?
Take that.
They are not.
Thank you so much, Herman. Thank you so much for your 2 cents on that. Let's move on, guys. Hi, Herman. Okay, guys. So I think this is a norm now. We must accept it in Joburg. So the water crisis yet again comes back in Josie. Nandi worked on the story, and basically she was going around, like we usually do when there's a water crisis, talking to people. She spoke to a business man who basically was explaining how he was affected by this water shortage. Let's take a listen to that clip right there.
It gets affected. You know, like you can't cook, you can't clean, you can't use the sanitary facilities, you know, the toilet facilities. When you can't cook, you can't give food to our customers. If you can't clean, customers are unhappy because the place is dirty, cockroaches and things like that. So I think just it's a problem across the board. So I just think the government needs to do a little bit more in terms of fixing up things, or have a plan or a structure in place to try and fix it. That's all. And if there's something that we can assist with, then we will also, I think everybody, the community here will gladly try and assist, because it negatively impacts them. You know, I mean, here we have to go and buy water to sell water, and then we land up increasing the price because we're paying more for the product. And then the customers get unhappy. They think that we're trying to make an extra rent, but it's not, because when people know that the water is going to go off for 3-4 days or 5 days, then everybody that supplies this kind of water, they they increase their price because, you know, it's a chain reaction.
So, Mandy, just explain to us exactly how long have people have not had water? What is the situation on the ground? What is Joburg Water saying?
So, you see, with Joburg Water, guys, it's an unending problem. We just have to accept it that we don't have water, and yeah, it is what it is. But it's sad because this community, Kiki, Peria, Yeovil, and just all those sites in Joburg, they just said that they did not have water for 3 weeks. So, and whenever that they would have water, it's like 1 hour in that week, and you won't really do anything with that 1 hour. And if you missed it, you missed it. You'll see which way you get your water. And it, and also for businesses, you know, salons, people who cook. Because this other lady was like, I mean, it looks like tomorrow I'm not going to open. Because, yeah, now she stays in Hillbrow. And apparently Hillbrow, there's not really much problem. So she has to ask a bolt driver, can I at least just put 20 liters of water? You know how Uber drivers are in their cars?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So she says that it's a battle that she has to fight every morning. But it's really sad because Joburg Water is saying, Bona, on their side, is that Rand Water had a power failure. So it's not their fault, so Rand Water. But it, despite them retrieving that power and fixing everything, they don't guarantee residents that water will come very quickly or swiftly. It will still take time for water to be restored and. But the council said something about a reservoir, Beria Reservoir. It's empty. So I don't understand how it's a faultier Rand Water or it's a faultier Joburg Water. I think these two entities are just like finger pointing. It's you. And no one is really coming with a good solution. Because Joburg Water is saying, Nipuza manzi kakhulu, guys. That's why you don't have water. So I just don't know.
No, but I must say, I must give it to Joburg Water. They are always releasing statements on water consumption, hey? They're always telling us, guys, limit your water consumption. And my thing is that how do you tell people not to drink water? It's so weird. But my problem is that with the Beria Reservoir, guys, I went to the one reservoir, if I can remember. I think it was all the way in Orange Farm. And that reservoir was barely even halfway through. And that community also had problems with water. And it was literally, guys, I don't even know how to describe this. I think we all know the Oros bottle, ne? Imagine the Oros juice bottle. And that bottom part before the wrapper, yeah, Oros, you know, that Oros advertisement wrapper comes in. It's literally that's how small it is. And you would think, and if that's only the reservoir co Orange Farm, imagine the reservoir go Beria, and the councillor is telling you it's empty. I would believe the councillor. I would believe the councillor if the councillor told me a reservoir is empty. Because, and my thing is that I also don't blame Joburg Water. And like, I blame Rand Water. Because it's not even Joburg Water, guys. Joburg Water gets water from Rand Water. Tuani gets water from where? Rand Water. Rand Water.
Response, they tell you speak to Joburg Water.
That's my problem. Like, how is it Joburg Water? It's Rand Water's infrastructure. It's Rand Water's infrastructure. You guys, they're the ones who pump the water from Eval Dam. Last time I checked, it's their systems. So you can't be saying it's Joburg Water when Joburg Water buys the water from you. That's my problem there. But my also thing is that, guys, these areas, the Beria is not the first time it's gone through this thing. How are they drinking water? That's the rest of us. Are not experiencing the same problem.
Stop it, guys.
Herman, do you have 2 cents?
How funny that first world last city, whatever, in Africa is experiencing water crisis. So, Kweda, are you still on your stand? Hey, Joburg, it's this thing.
Yeah. Hey, man, let me get you straight. Ooh, hey, man, let me get you straight.
No, anyway, my take.
No, Herman, you brought it up. You asked me a question. Let me answer it.
Okay.
Herman, aren't your people in Hammanskraal not complaining about contaminated water.
They are not just in the CBD.
After they fixed, just thank after you, they fixed
they're not in the whole CBD, treatment Quena, plant. And they're not in the CBD, firstly. And I've been explaining to you that this thing, they affected, are not part of the Royval plant that was launched weeks before. It was launched in January. I've been trying to explain, but it's fine. Either way, I'm saying that it's actually embarrassing that a high court, not even a magistrate, can say we are closing because we don't have water. So it's actually embarrassing. I think the whole province should take the blame and do something. I mean, that means they don't have sufficient water tanks, or jojo, if you like to call it. And it shows that they don't have even a plan B to say, you know what, yes, we don't have water, but let's think of something fast. They say, let's close down because go bad. So the situation is actually embarrassing, Joe. I don't want to lie. To think of it, Joburg is supposed to be the city of gold. Or you only have gold and you don't have water. you must bring that gold to Pretoria so that we can wash it.
Work in Joburg.
Yeah?
You work in Joburg.
Yeah, because okay. I'm forced to, eh? if it was up to me.
Just stop it.
You must bring that gold so that we can wash it, because I boo.
No, but shame, hey. And it's very sad, Bella, because we were talking to a Judge Matters expert, and he was saying that imagine a high court that deals with about 40 to 80 cases in just one courtroom, not even the whole court, but one courtroom, one judge is handling at least 40 cases per day. And you're telling me they close it for 2 days.
And it's not even about matters being heard, Jogona. It's also the fact that we know they have like a backlog. Like they have matters. Otolo judge is sitting there, he's dealing with 5 matters in a week. And it's a trial. You remember trial should be that thing you call witnesses, you calling in. So others even appear just to get postponed because they can't deal. They don't have resources or manpower to do that. So when you close for 2 days, what are you
expecting? Yeah. Guys, it's difficult. It's definitely, I think like we just keep getting hit by more and more problems. And now, Maile, MEC of finance, Maile.
Let's fix things. Let's
saying he's releasing statements about how he's promising the province 80 billion in just 3 years.
No, I'm saying Kwena, let's fix our statements. Joburg is going through a lot. There's explosions, there's water crisis. let's not involve others. Let's
no, Heaven. Chuan is also problematic as it is. Let's not even touch on Ekurhuleni. Anyway, let's move on, guys. So a colleague of ours, Jeanette Tshabalala, did a horrific case of a woman who basically reported her 2-year-old son, basically missing. I think it was a time last year. And in the case developing, the woman is from Vanderbilt Park. She is accused of basically selling her daughter. Her son. And it came out in Revelations this week. So in court, they looked at her bank statements and they noticed that the minute you basically said that your son was missing, you reported your son missing. At the same time, you received 75,000 rand into your account. Explain that. And I think everybody was quite shocked because it's a matter of everybody was looking for this child. You know, people are putting resources. The police is putting resources into looking for this child. But it's a thing, no man. You must look right where you started. Guys, Herman, Nandi, thoughts?
Honestly, I would say that when they say abafazi, bafazi abazi, this is not right, guys. So, this woman, I also remember that she's also pregnant, né? She's expecting.
Yeah, she's also pregnant now as well. She's expecting, I think they said twins, last time I checked.
Gone. Again. It's not funny, but you know, it's very sad. And I remember before they revealed that it was 75,000, the judge, was it the judge that said you received large amounts of money? And Yena, she said it's not large amounts. So, she's just it's not even that much. You are complaining about something that doesn't even amount like 75,000. Like, I'm very
disappointed
with this woman. I mean, it's hurting. And to think that Ukinelo is somewhere out there and he's just a little boy and he's probably looking for, crying for his mother. And I just pray he's still alive. I pray he's still alive and well taken care of by this new family. Please.
Oh, Nandi, but do you think it's a new family, though? In cases like this, I don't know, guys. Me, I'm someone who, like, I think the worst before I think positive. I think negative, eh? I'm a pessimist. My mind is literally going straight towards child trafficking, sex trafficking. And it's a horrible thing to imagine that a mother would, not even a father, you know? Sometimes you expect this from the father.
So on a lighter note, or just point of clarity, guys, Kinewe is the mother and the child is Kutwano. But
Kutwano.
So Nandi, I just wanted you to repeat your first statement. What did you say? Abafazi.
Bafazi. Yeah.
What's Abafazi say?
Bafazi.
Yeah, and Ukwena was trying to debate that when we were speaking about that mojo. Anyway, guys, I tried to follow the case because I was still busy also with my case. So apparently, there was a demand for 40K before it went to 75K. And there are allegations that this Kukwano is not the first child to go missing. And yeah, she has twins that are alive. I'm not sure if she's pregnant with twins now. But yeah.
So this woman just makes babies to sell. Let me get this straight.
Allegedly. it's very concerning to use the bold words, Quina. Anyway, my take is that at first, one will think it's poverty, but then, I mean, poverty does not allow you to be so heartless. Because, I mean, for me, I grew up in a family of, we couldn't afford as we wanted, but we never thought of evil things. And you're always willing to share with everyone. But poverty teaches you humanity, teaches you care, teaches you love. So it's not even poverty. People who say maybe she was trying to make means put food on the table. I should tell you all, this is just a heartless act. I mean, to sell your own child, it's similar to those who give birth and throw them in the bin afterwards. That's actually what she has done, but yeah, nah, she didn't throw, she sold allegedly again.
I think that's even
I feel like...
Sorry, Herman.
Yeah?
No, get a son with an amlomo. Go on.
No, you can add.
No, I was saying, I think the situation where the one grows one in the bin, at least the bin, the child can still be found, you know, and taken to the hospital. Hey, and, you know, that's better.
Right.
Yes, it's not the ideal option.
Yeah.
But it's so much better than you knowingly selling your kid. And no one knows where that child is going to. and you don't, you, and the thing is, what's funny is that you know where the child is going to. You know probably maybe that child is probably going to be sex trafficked or something. You probably know. And whereas with the 1 year, where you live in the dustbin, like literally probably die of cold, die of hunger, or somebody finds the child and reports it. I mean, I'm not sure if you guys saw that when you had the Lesotho national who dumped her child, and then the police later found her and said, why would you dump your child? Like, guys, that is a much better case. I think this one is very sinister in a thing. It's just greed. It's not even poverty. It's greed.
Sorry, Nandi. I hear it's a better option, Nobo. I know you're not saying it's an ideal option, but I still believe it's also heartless, Joe. I mean, we have, okay, when you don't have a child, you have contraceptives. You either Jova injection, you use condoms. So if you don't want kid, don't make kid. Don't get us into a situation whereby we find the child in a dustbin. I mean, dustbin are not healthy by themselves, whether you are 20, you are 30. And I'm not attacking you because you said it's not an ideal. But I'm just saying, it's not even worth the comparison, because both matters are actually disgusting. Because firstly, you throw that child in the dustbin, she inhales or he inhales whatever is in the dustbin, and then 10 years then down the line, only the complications, and now the next family suffers because of your jealousy or because of your heartless action. I mean, if you don't have a child, if you don't want to have a child, you can go to a hospital and say, you know what? Yeah, I became pregnant by mistake. If it happens by mistake, I don't want this baby. So can we at least do an abortion, which is an option? It's legal in South Africa. Or can I just give birth and leave the child here with social workers? Because we know there are families that want children, but they cannot have children. So they might just go to the hospital and say, hey, Joe, we are looking for a 5-year-old black child, a boy, and then they get the boy. I mean, for me, that's the way to solve the whole thing of not wanting a child. Nandi, sorry to come before you. You can speak.
I think we're going to cover it. It's not a poverty, I mean. This woman sells clothes again, or what? Like those.
Yes. And I said that too, because I said poverty teaches you humanity. Hey. Poverty teaches you love. Poverty teaches you care. So this one is clearly being heartless and being selfish.
And
I don't know to what extent, but yeah, it's something disgusting.
I know you're saying when you think the worst, but I'm really just praying that she just gave the child for adoption illegal. That part. Because if it's human if it's child trafficking, then it's very sad. Imagine that child grows up and they start. It's a death situation.
Yeah. It's a very sad one, eh? Hey guys. Let's end on a lighter note, guys. Something positive. So retired tennis legend player Roger Federer and Springbok captain Siya Kolisi have joined forces to uplift education in South Africa. Right. So the duo plans to basically support disadvantaged schools by improving nutrition programs and promoting school sports. I am all for this. I am all for this. I just have one concern. It's been done before. And I'm not saying it won't work. I'm just saying that it's been done before. And we've seen in areas where it's been done before, there's either corruption with the principals, the teachers, who are stealing these things, and then what happens sometimes, these programs are even cancelled. But yeah, that's just my two cents, and I'm very much for it. teach basically you're getting off the kids off the school, off the streets. I support it very much as well. So go for it. I love the idea. Nandi, Herman?
I love the idea, ne? I love it. Like, it's good that they're actually doing something good for the schools. But in terms of the selection of the schools, which schools are they going to be going into? Because most of the time that they do go to underserved schools from, those underserved communities. But, like, they are geographic. Do they go all over South Africa, or they target the ones that born, they feel like, you see this one at least? Because most of these things are basically done in schools where you could find kids that they can do it. I mean, their parents can afford to do it for them. But township schools, I've never seen such initiative. I mean, being introduced in our township schools. I went to school in townships, and the last time I did sports was in primary. High school, nothing. And I got demotivated because I was an athlete and I loved to run. But because of, we don't pay too much attention to that, and also the resources and also the dedication and all of that. So I just pray that Osia Kolisi and his friend, can't pronounce the surname, and his friend, they are able to identify township schools that we can see their presence. Mina, I would love to see them as Soweto, personally.
So, Unandi, what were you running from? I heard that you said you loved running.
And I was an athlete. That's it.
So, just for context, these guys went to several schools in rural areas in Mpumalanga. And then
I knew it.
And then to
see.
So, my take is, I mean, it's a good thing. Nandi, you just said it unaware that you are saying it. I mean, the reason why private schools usually have high top achievers is because everything they do, they have a schedule. School of Sabona at 1 o'clock, it's chai. Lessons are over. Tina in Black South African, primary school, Rekena from 6 to 6. So we don't have time to go and play, to refresh our mind. So if they're going to introduce sports, I mean, that's where we can refresh our mind. And sometimes when we're playing tennis or you're playing soccer, you'll be like, hey, Joe, did you see that problem, that X? It was actually X is equal to 2. And when I get home, I say, I know, man, Ukwena said X is equal to 2. Why did she say that? That's when we get a time to engage in a less informal way, in a way, but we also continue to teach one another. So now I support the idea. I mean, public schools really need sports programs because, even Unandi was doing well when she was in primary because she was running, and when she was at high school.
You guys like make me laugh, but I must just say, hey, it's not a township thing. They always go to the rural areas. No offense to you, Nandi, for you and your running, Mara, they go to the township areas where vele, like, you know, the classes, the windows are broken, there's like one stool. They always look for the poverty areas, my friend. So, and unfortunately, in Soweto, there's no poverty. There's no extremely poor schools. There's no extremely poor schools there. So, and also, I think in regards to township schools, I think you guys have, like, saw yourself short. I think we spoke about it last week, guys. The township schools, compared to the private schools, to the quantile 4 schools, the quantile 4 schools, they have working, they have their parents, they're also supporting them in these sports.
Introducing rugby, Soweto. We have a lot of kids who love rugby because there is no access or what, it just ends there. You love rugby, that's it. Imagine the motivation behind that. Parent, stop saying that Soweto does not have poverty. We need such things. We have
poverty. So now you're fighting for poverty.
Poverty. I'm saying, can we have such things, guys, in Soweto? Please. That's it.
I don't need, but to be honest,
start paying and then you we'll guys talk. Need... Start paying for services and then we'll talk.
That's
okay, guys. Let's leave it. So that's all for this week's news wrap. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts, review and subscribe for free on Ayono FM, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. You can also follow us on all social media platforms at Sowetan Live. This is a Times Live production, and our producer is the lovely Demi Buzo. Thank you for tuning in, guys. Join us again for next week for more updates on the biggest stories from me, Gwena, and my colleagues, Nandi and Herman. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.